You know, 4 years ago, I sat here with all of you live on YouTube for the very first Winter is Coming episode of Dynamite. 913,000 viewers for that episode of Dynamite. So you could tell it feels like a lifetime ago. They had 913,000 viewers for a show that took place at Daly's Place in Jacksonville. They were still limited by the pandemic. So they were running shows out of their home base. That was the night that Sting made his debut in AEW. Tony Schiavone, Sting. We got the big Sting announcement every single week. And Sting came out. It's too bad that Sting couldn't make his debut in front of like a big arena in front of actual people. But there he was, making his debut on the very same night that Kenny Omega became the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. Beat Jon Moxley. We got a world championship change on that show. So it was a very big episode. And each year, progressively, they seem to feel less and less important. None more so than this year. This one is just at the bottom of the heap. We did not get anything nearly as important as the debut of Sting or a World Heavyweight Championship change on this show. But they were in front of actual fans. And one thing I can say that is an improvement on some of the other places where they've done Dynamite, and one of these little things that I noticed, is that the crowd was lit up a lot better. You know, so many of these shows, probably because they're in bigger buildings with not a lot of people, it's very dark. And I noticed it really in the opening match that you could actually see the people in the background. So that's nice. I like it when we can actually see the people in the audience. So that much I was actually happy to see tonight. But we closed the show. The main event spot went to the women tonight. For the Women's World Championship, Mariah May defending her title against her former best friend, Mina Shirakawa. And they had a good match, but it was the post-match where we had the big return of the former women's world champion, Toni Storm, but not timeless Toni Storm. We had the return of the OG, Toni Storm. She's no longer timeless. You know, the great thing about it is she could always bring it back at some point. She just, basically, she's like Back to the Future, where she was stuck in one time period, and she was able to make it back to the modern day. But anytime she wants to go back, all she has to do is jump in the DeLorean, just hit 88 miles an hour, and she can go back to being timeless Toni Storm again. But it, you know, it's a gimmick that I didn't expect to enjoy as much as I did. It was very goofy and over the top. But as time went on, I mean, she was fully invested in this character. And she, after a while, became one of the most entertaining parts of the entire show. And her and Mariah May together became one of the most entertaining acts on the entire television show. And she played that character perfectly. She was as invested as anybody else in wrestling in their character and their persona. So she did great with it, but you just get to a point where it's like, all right, what more can you really do? She did all she could do. And if you don't evolve, if you don't adapt, then you die. And so now we're back to the OG Toni Storm. Obviously, this is going to set up for an eventual rematch between her and Mariah May, which may not be happening so fast. So anybody saying, oh, world's end. World's end in a few weeks. Don't be so sure of yourself there. But it was good to get Toni Storm back on the show tonight. We had more good action as well in the Continental Classic. Tonight it was Claudio Castagnoli and Will Ospreay. And it was Ricochet taking on Brody King, both Gold League matches. We now have a three-way tie amongst the top-ranked participants in the Gold League after tonight's show. MJF made his return tonight. You know, one of the things that I have not liked about Dynamite is the fact that we've been getting these pre-tapes with MJF because he's not available. He's not actually on the show physically every week. So he was tonight, and so that's a step up, but he did nothing. I mean, he got involved in one of the matches on the show, but he really didn't do anything. So as flat of a return for MJF as you will ever see, and that was very disappointing. We had an Adam Cole-Kyle O'Reilly match that, while the work was fine, I just don't give two shits about what's going on between these two. This was a means to an end. The end being, let's just get Adam Cole into the match at World's End with MJF. Please, let's just get to the match. And that's exactly what we're going to be getting at the end of the month. At World's End, it will be Adam Cole against MJF. But not just Adam Cole against MJF. It'll be Adam Cole against MJF for a diamond ring that really doesn't matter in all this, because this is not about a diamond ring. This is about the issue between Cole and MJF and the history between them going back to last year. It has nothing to do with the diamond ring. I don't even know why there's a need to have the diamond ring on the line. I'm sure it'll play a factor in the finish of their match. But the fact that it's for the diamond ring, who gives a shit? Right? It doesn't matter. It's just, it's incidental. But it's a lot better than getting Kyle O'Reilly against MJF and then making us wait another 1 or 2 months before we could finally blow this thing off between MJF and Adam Cole. This brings us one step closer, I hope, at the end of this month, to the end of this, so that these two men can move on to other opponents and other stories. Because this one's done. I know they're trying to put, you know, a period on it. They're trying to give it a proper ending. They want to extend it out. This story is done. This story was done 6 months ago. But at least we're finally going to get the match. This was not as good as last week. I thought the show was solid. It was definitely not as good as last week's show. I'm going to be honest with you. It's just very hard right now to care about a lot of what's going on this show from week to week. You can pick out a wrestler here and there that you might really like. You know, Ospreay was on the show tonight. And anytime Will Ospreay is in the ring on the show, you have my attention, because he has proven himself to be one of the MVPs of this company and the in-ring MVP of this company for 2024. So I will always tune in if he's got a match. You know, he wrestled Juice Robinson on Collision a couple of weeks ago. That's the kind of performer that Ospreay is. So when I see that he's on the show, I'm interested. Okay, you have my interest. But there's just very few people like that, and very few stories and very few things going on right now on Dynamite from week to week that really grabs me. And it just makes for a very dull show. So the wrestling is fine. You know, the Continental Classic, you know you're going to get very good wrestling every week. But there's just not much else there. The Death Rider story is playing itself out. I can't sit here and tell you it's very interesting, because it's not. It's just not. Mercedes Moné is going to defend her TBS championship next week against Anna Jay. Nothing wrong with doing that match. But, you know, slapped together in a few weeks. Anna tried to communicate the story in the backstage promo they had on the show tonight and why it's so important to her, and that's great, but not really a compelling feud here between these two. Mina and Mariah, that seemingly was ended tonight with Mina's loss. Now they're setting up a rematch with Tony and Mariah, so that should be interesting, you know, whenever we finally get that match. You got Cole and MJF. There's just not a whole lot else going on right now. You know, and that's the problem. This Winter is Coming episode definitely did not feel special the way that past Winter is Coming episodes have felt special. And if I had to rank all of them, this one would be dead last. This was the worst of all of them. This would be at the bottom of the pile. But it's just, it's a reflection of where the product is right now relative to where it was 4 years ago when they had the first Winter is Coming, relative to 3 years ago when we had that hour-long Iron Man match between Bryan Danielson and Hangman Page, or MJF and Ricky Starks when Ricky was really starting to get going as a babyface, right? We're just in a very different place right now with AEW. And in many ways, it's just not as good as it was before, and I hope they can get back there, but they're not there right now. And so it's just a reflection of where they were and where they are, and that's just the way it is. But this is your AEW Dynamite Winter is Coming 2024 review. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you guys for hanging out with me here on a Wednesday night. I've been here with you for every single Winter is Coming. It's very cold in here. You see the snow is falling here. I got my fleece on. Make yourself a cup of hot cocoa and pull on up and get ready to talk some AEW here. We'll keep each other warm. It may be cold in here as the snow falls, but we'll keep each other warm, right? It's a lot of 98.6s that are in here right now. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. I don't know how many we're going to get tonight, but if we get, I appreciate it. It's the easiest way to support me and the streams and what I do here. And of course, I will read your messages as I do every single stream. So go ahead and get those on in, and I will read your messages and try to answer your questions. We had a big Q&A at the end of the Raw review on Monday. You never know. You never know what we're going to have at the end. But hopefully we'll do Be the Booker if we hit our likes goal. So hit the likes button as well. The show opened with the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. We didn't have any world championship title defenses as far as the men. We did not have a world championship change on this show like we did that first Winter Is Coming. But we did have the AEW World Champion in a tag team match to open the show. Jon Moxley and Pac taking on Orange Cassidy and Switchblade Jay White. They showed Christian Cage, Nick Wayne, Mother Wayne, and Kip Sabian sitting up in one of the luxury boxes. Early in the match, you can see them all sitting up there. And after a commercial break, they cut back up there and they showed Christian. He was talking to the other members of the Patriarch. And he sent them off. And so Mother Wayne and Nick Wayne and Kip Sabian, they all left and Christian stayed behind and he had a big smile on his face. And we didn't know where they were off to, but he was up there all by himself. Moxley and Cassidy, they ended up tagging into the match at the same time. Cassidy threw a PK. Didn't exactly connect flush. And there was enough light there in between Moxley and the kick that even Nigel McGuinness on commentary tried to cover for it and say, well, he just kind of grazed him. It was a grazing shot. Yes. So Cassidy hit a spike DDT to Pac. And then followed up with another one to Moxley that got him a near fall. You could tell that it's winter because I'm a little under the weather. So you'll have to bear with me here if I am not at my best. How are you doing, by the way? I hope that none of you are under the weather. I hope that you're doing just peachy here on a Wednesday night. Just bear with me. We'll try to get through this here. Moxley, though, after the spike DDT to Pac, Moxley got one as well. But then he sat up, and he got Cassidy in a sleeper hold. Cassidy escaped, though. He had another DDT. White took out Pac with the Dragon Suplex. Cassidy hit Beach Break on Moxley for a near fall. Now, Wheeler Yuta, the little bastard, he jumps up on the apron, tries to distract the referee. Cassidy, though, he shakes off Marina Shafir's interference attempt. And Cassidy hit orange punches to Wheeler Yuta and to Jon Moxley. And then, wouldn't you know, Hangman Page shows up. And Hangman Page runs into the ring and he attacks Jon Moxley and the referee calls for the bell. We have ourselves a disqualification to end this match. The always fun disqualification finish here. We got ourselves a DQ. Yes, it was a lame finish to a long match because these guys went about 15 minutes. But they didn't want to beat the Death Riders. And in the very next match, Claudio Castagnoli was losing. So they didn't want these guys to lose back-to-back matches. So this is what we ended up with here. That, and they're trying to establish a story among the challengers who were all at each other's throat going into World's End. So that's why they did the finish that they did here. So after the match, Cassidy and Pac, they start fighting. Cassidy went for an orange punch on Hangman, but he ducked. And Cassidy hit Jay White by accident. Cassidy then put Hangman down with an orange punch. Jay White then dropped Orange Cassidy with a Blade Runner. So with White, Cassidy, and Page down on the mat, and they're all bickering, Moxley, Pac, Shafir, and Wheeler Yuta, they all get back into the ring, and they start working them over. And then the Death Riders leave the ring. They hop the barricade while White, Cassidy, and Paige roll down on the inside. I would say this was probably longer than it needed to be. But the point of this was to create tension. They wanted to create tension among the challengers who were all vying for the world championship right now. These were all the different challengers that they've set up for Jon Moxley's title. There are no friends, right? It's like the Royal Rumble. It's every man for himself, and that works to Moxley's advantage if they're at each other's throats. So then after this, in the back, they made it official. We had a Death Riders promo. Moxley was back there with his crew, and he said that he's a marked man. He said, heavy is the head who wears the crown. With a knife to your throat, he wouldn't have it any other way. And everybody is all about their ego, wanting the next title shot. Their egos run their lives, and their egos run all Elite Wrestling. None of this is about Moxley. He says it's about the people, his people. And he said that he'll give them an early Christmas gift, World's End Fatal 4-Way for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. So there you go. I mean, we all knew this was coming, but now they've made the match official. It will be a Fatal 4-Way for the AEW World title on December 28th. We got part two after last week's vignette. If you remember, I talked about Bandido is on his way back to AEW. And we had a vignette last week where they dressed up this little small town like it was the Old West. And we had a couple of cowboys walking around talking to each other. And they showed a wanted poster. And the man on the wanted poster was Bandido. And Bandido has not been seen in a very long time. He has not been in a match since June of last year. Broke his wrist, had surgery, didn't heal right, had a second surgery. So he's been gone for a long time. But now he's back. So this was part two. And this time Bandido rode into town on horseback. And the other cowboys told him that he was under arrest. We could do this the easy way or we could do this the hard way. Guess which way he chose. Bandido got down off his horse. He took off his cape. He was wearing a cape. And he ended up laying all four men out. And then he left. And again, this is very straightforward, but I like this a lot. You know, I think it's a great way to reintroduce someone, make him feel special. I mean, they do vignettes for other people. We've seen the Julia Hart vignettes over the last several weeks. And I think, by the way, all of these are great. These are all great. They might be a little hokey, but you know, in a way, they kind of remind me of Lucha Underground. These don't have the production value that Lucha Underground had. And it's not, I'm not saying it is Lucha Underground. I fucking love Lucha Underground. But it's got that vibe to it. And I think that it's fine to put together, you know, vignettes and segments like this. It kind of breaks up all the wrestling on the show. But it's a great way to reintroduce Bandido as someone special. I don't know if this is the last one or they're going to do more of these. This felt to me like it would probably be the last one. But I'm looking forward to seeing him back in action. Christian Cage had a microphone. He was still up in the suite. Actually, he was kind of sitting in the stands just outside the suite. But he's up there in the stands. He's got a microphone. He's all by himself. And he says that he's got a problem with this Fatal 4-Way match now that's been set up for World's End. And he has issues with all four men in the match. He said Jon Moxley has what he wants. Orange Cassidy is a little pissant. Jay White has unfinished business with him, and Hangman Page didn't do what he was supposed to do when they made their little deal a few weeks ago. Cage said he's going to drive Moxley to drink again, and then he'll have to go back to rehab, while he, being Christian, will have to rehab the AEW World Heavyweight Championship when he wins it. So he turned to go leave, because you leave on a high note. You know, when you talk about driving a man back to drinking and sending him back to rehab and to AA, I mean, it's like, all right, we've done our job here. It's time to leave. So he turned to go leave. Now he's in the suite, but then he turns back around to address the crowd. But we can see behind him. Now he can't see this, but we can see behind him because there's a door, and through the glass you see Hook standing outside the door to the suite. Eventually, Christian turns around, and he sees Hook. Hook takes his arm, which was wrapped, I assume, a towel, and he busts the window out, See, this is what Bill Goldberg should have done when he put his fucking hand through the limousine window on Nitro all those years ago. Or Thunder, whatever it was. Might have been Thunder. But I don't think he wrapped his arm or his hand in anything. He's like an idiot. He just put it through the window and he fucked himself all up. But he busts out the window and now Hook enters the suite and he attacks Christian, beats the hell out of him. He's got his arm in a cast, by the way. Maybe that's what it was. I'm talking about a towel. I think it was a cast. Again, I got 108 degree fever. You got to excuse me. So now he's beating the hell out of Christian Cage, and he puts red rum is applied. He tries to send Christian flying off the balcony down below. So nothing like a good old fashioned act of attempted murder here. Christian, though, manages to fight free, and he retreats back into the suite. Hook follows him, beats him up some more. Now Nick Wayne is there. Kip Sabian is there. They try to fight off Hook. Hook fights them off. Christian, meanwhile, he bolted out of there. So Hook leaves the suite and goes after him, and that's how the segment ended. So this was fine. It was Christian being a slimy little worm, and at least we didn't have Hook cutting a promo this week. Hook is not a very good promo. And every time he has a microphone and he comes out, unless it's something very short and sweet where he's saying, you know, so-and-so, get your ass out here. Like, that's fine. Anything more than that, and it's a little dicey. So Hook is at his best when he's just going around beating people up. And that's what we got here. So that was fine. Now we had another Gold League match in the Continental Classic. And this one was between Will Ospreay and Claudio Castagnoli. As soon as the bell sounded, Ospreay sprinted into a standing Spanish fly and he took Claudio over with it. I mean, you knew the match wasn't going to end then and there, but they tried to get you with that quick near fall, but he kicked out. So Ospreay was in control for a little bit until Claudio, he wrenched the arm and he sent Ospreay outside. Claudio tried sending Ospreay into the steps. Ospreay, though, cleared the steps and then drop-kicked them into the legs. He tried to leap off. Claudio, though, caught and slammed him into the barricade. Then he delivered a giant swing into the steps. So as Claudio tipped the stairs over, he trapped Ospreay's arm in them, and then he stood on top of the steps, and then he stomped on Ospreay's wrist. And Claudio had control during the commercial break. He got a sharpshooter applied. Ospreay, though, sprung out of it into a springboard hurricanrana and then a handspring corkscrew kick. Ospreay missed the hidden blade, but he was able to avoid the Ricola bomb into an octopus. Castagnoli got the ropes, went back to the arm, hit a double stomp to the back, and then both men battled in the corner. Ospreay fought off a superplex attempt, and then he tried a leap of faith. He rolled through. He ate an uppercut, which turned him inside out. So now he's toying with Ospreay. And Claudio is just toying with this man. And Ospreay, all that does is just fire him up. So now Ospreay hits an os cutter. Claudio, though, wisely rolls outside. Back inside, Ospreay wanted the hidden blade. He ran into a pop-up uppercut for two. Claudio connected on the home run lariat that they've done a good job of establishing here in the early part of this tournament. That's how he beat Darby Allin a few weeks ago. And he's beaten, I think, a couple of other people with it as well. So that was the whole point of establishing the clothesline, was to set up the first time that somebody would kick out of it, it would be a big deal. And so Ospreay became the first person to kick out of it. Claudio wanted the neutralizer. Ospreay got a jackknife pin, and he got the flash win. And with that win, Ospreay earns himself 3 points in this tournament. After the match, Claudio attacked him, hit a neutralizer, and then he went outside and he grabbed a chair. Darby Allin comes out. He makes the save with a baseball bat. Claudio just runs off through the crowd. And Darby was looking back at the ring as he was leaving. And he was eyeballing Ospreay. Because the two of them were going to meet on Dynamite. They got their Holiday Bash episode coming up next week. And I believe that's a first-time-ever match. Will Ospreay and Darby Allin. I'm actually very much looking forward to that match. I think that is going to be an interesting match. It's It's going to be an interesting match in terms of crowd reaction and who the crowd sides with, if they pick sides, and just how they work together stylistically. So that's the kind of match that makes the Continental Classic interesting, because you have the opportunity to get these match combinations that are unique and that in some cases we haven't seen before. And that's one of the things I like about this tournament. So that match is coming up next week. This match here was very good. As expected, it was nothing blow away, but they've done a good job of building up Claudio the past several weeks for that kick out spot on the lariat. With him wrestling Darby next week, though, I don't think the outcome here was really in any doubt. Renee was backstage to introduce Ricochet. Everybody calm down. Calm down. I was joking. If I had 108, I'd be dead. Okay? Seriously. I'll say 108, figuring they'll get the joke, and I have people who are like ready to call 911 here in the chat. Just calm down. It's not that bad. It's not that bad, I promise you. I'd be shaking, right? I'd have the shakes right now. I'd be chattering. It would be awful. But Renee was in the back to introduce Ricochet. And this was embarrassing. And this was embarrassing because he paused when he walked in, he paused for a reaction. And there was none. Like, WWE will do this the same way, where they'll go to the back, Jackie Redmond, Kathy Kelly, Renee when she used to be there. You know, allow me to introduce my guest at this time, you know, Sheamus. And then Sheamus walks in and, you know, they kind of they acknowledge the reaction they could hear from the fans in the arena, and it's boos or it's cheers. Here it was nothing. it was nothing. It was no reaction at all. He says tonight he faces Brody King. And this is why he came to AEW. He came to AEW for the competition. He says, Brody King is big, he's bad, he's scary. One thing he's not, though, is Ricochet. Implying that Ricochet is not big, he's not bad, he's not scary. Kind of buried himself there. He says, they're both 1-1 in the Continental Classic. And then he looked inside his jacket pocket, and he pulled out MVP's business card. And he said, tonight, he has all the cards. And then he made some kind of weird bird noise. And then he left. That's what it was to me. It sounded like it was some kind of weird mating call or something. And then he left. Meanwhile, elsewhere, someone arrives in an SUV in the back. In the parking area, they step out. This person is wearing the Dynamite diamond ring, and that could only mean one thing. And we see him from the back. We don't see him from the front, but clearly it's MJF. And he is making his way into the arena. Elsewhere, we go back to Renee, and she interviews Matt Cardona. Matt Cardona, and asks him if he is ready for Chris Jericho at Final Battle. So yes, I didn't want to mention it last week, because they were taping Rampage that night. And the spoilers were already getting out, but I didn't want to spoil it for anybody who didn't want to know, but not that you really give a shit, but Matt Cardona, not Mark Briscoe, not Samoa Joe, Matt Cardona will be the opponent for Chris Jericho in his Ring of Honor world title at Final Battle, which is taking place at the Hammerstein, as he would say, ballroom on December 20th. I will not be watching on December 20th because I will be in Queens while they're in Manhattan. I've got other obligations, but Matt Cardona is back in AEW and he's wrestling Jericho. So now you're all brought up to speed if you didn't watch Rampage last week. So he said, it's great to be back in AEW. He said he's busted his ass to reinvent himself over the last 5 years on the independent scene. And now he has the biggest opportunity of his career. Try not to laugh. Facing Chris Jericho at Final Battle. And then he challenged Brian Keith to a match on Rampage. Now, look, I get that Cardona is trying to sell this match. He's in the main event at Final Battle against Chris Jericho. He wants to, He wants to make this feel like the biggest thing in the world. But if wrestling Chris Jericho for the Ring of Honor World title in 2024 is the biggest opportunity of your career, you may need to reevaluate your career. I'm just saying. There was a time when that would have really meant something, but at this point, it doesn't. I'm sorry. We had Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. Now, they were the final two, if you recall, left in the Battle Royal, the terribly boring Battle Royal, the Triple B, the boring Battle Royal, last week. And they wrestled tonight with the winner challenging MJF at World's End for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. I don't know why this needs to be for the Diamond Ring. Nobody gives a shit about the Diamond Ring. And also, you know, Kyle O'Reilly wants the match too. Kyle wasn't getting the match. Now, in the back before the match, Renee, who apparently is the only person that is available to work these backstage segments. I know they have other people. I know they have, what's her name? The last woman they hired, our Kitty Aura, I think her name is. And you've got, who's the other backstage interviewer? She just got married to Big Bill the other day. Her name just escaped me. Maybe she's on her honeymoon right now. Do you mean to tell me there's nobody else in the back who could help out Renee and do some of these backstage interviews? This poor woman has to run around. Didn't she break her foot recently? She's running around with a broken foot doing all these interviews in the back. So we're back to her. And she's approaching Kyle O'Reilly before he comes out for his match. When Mike Taven and Matt Bennett, I'm telling you, man, my brain is fried. Mike Bennett and Matt Taven interrupt Kyle. Taven said they didn't need to do this. MJF is making them look like idiots. Oh, I don't think MJF needs to do much to make them look like idiots. Bennett said, regardless of what happens out there, we're still a family at the end of the day. And O'Reilly said, well, you should have thought about that before one of their brothers got hurt. Referring to Roderick Strong, who we have not seen since Full Gear when MJF broke his arm. Nothing of any note happened before the commercial break here in this match. Back from the break, O'Reilly went for a corner charge, but he ate a super kick. Cole wanted a Panama Sunrise. O'Reilly, though, hit a pump knee. Wanted a brain buster. Cole responded with one of his own for a two count. Cole then faked a high super kick, but hit one low. O'Reilly, though, recovered and connected on his diving knee strike from the apron. Back inside, O'Reilly missed a diving knee. Yes, Whiteface says, Mike Taven and Matt Bennett are his favorites. I think, well, I just created a new tag team here. If Solo's fever gets any worse, he's going to start screaming, I'm Matt Taven. I don't think it would ever get that bad. I don't think it would ever get that bad. Why isn't Renee the Death Rider's personal interviewer? You know what? That's a very good question. How come nobody calls this woman out? She does 18 promos in the course of a show. You mean to tell me now one of these wrestlers is going to turn to her and go, hey, Renee, what's going on with your husband? Why is he beating everybody up? Why is he terrorizing this company? Why is he holding the championship hostage? What's going on with him? Nobody? Nobody's going to ask the question? Okay. Just thought I would ask. Cole wanted a super kick. O'Reilly dodged and hit a desperation flying knee for the double down. After they got up, Cole hit a super kick. Only for Kyle to hit the old Nigel McGuinness lariat, the rebound lariat. He got an ankle lock applied. Cole, though, got a rope break. Then they battled up the ropes. Cole headbutted out of a superplex. Then he hits Panama Sunrise, but he took too long to follow up. Kyle picked the ankle into another ankle lock. Cole rolled through, and he sent Kyle to the floor. Back inside, O'Reilly collapsed like he was Shawn Michaels on Raw in 1995. And the referee went over to go check on him. Cole, meanwhile, is kind of up against the ropes because he was getting ready to lower the boom. He was getting ready for the kill shot. So now he's kind of hanging out over by the ropes. All of a sudden, there's a commotion, right? You can hear there's a commotion in the crowd. And MJF shows up. And he takes a shot, a cheap shot, at Cole, who ducked it, and then he caught MJF with a super kick. Kyle almost stole a pin because he tried to schoolboy this man. Cole, though, kicked out, and then he got an inside cradle of his own, and he picked up the win. Meanwhile, MJF, he storms off through the crowd, so we never got a promo from him. We got nothing from MJF. We got an attempt at a cheap shot, which backfired, and he got super kicked, and that was it. And the parting shot between these two guys was Cole on the ropes, looking at MJF in the crowd. They were kind of jawing back and forth, and MJF was telling him, "This ends at World's End. I'll see you at World's End." I'm like, that's it? This was MJF's big live return? That's pretty fucking lame. So Mike Bennett and Matt Taven, they come to the ring to congratulate Cole, who then offered a handshake to Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle, though, refused, and he left. The match itself was good. Again, very disappointing that that was it. We finally got MJF back live on the show, and that was the best they could come up with for him. So that was disappointing. The match itself, I mean, it was devoid of any real heat. I mean, the people were into some of the like the high spots and stuff, but you know, it was fine. But again, I'm not interested in this. I don't care about the Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly drama, which is now continuing because Kyle would not give him a handshake when the match was over. So whatever story is playing out here, I know there's a long history between these two, and it's going to be even longer because this story now is still has yet to play itself out fully. The most appropriate place for this match to happen is World's End. Cole and MJF. It was at World's End a year ago that we got the Devil reveal, and MJF lost his world championship to Samoa Joe. Here we are 1 year later, and my oh my, how things have changed. Look at where we are now. But it's kind of fitting that we're getting this match 1 year later at the same show. Is Kyle O'Reilly, a thought occurs to me, is Kyle O'Reilly going to cost Adam Cole the match? Right? I mean, he obviously still has a big beef with Adam Cole. Not really sure why. I guess, you know, he feels he's too obsessed over the MJF situation. I guess that's the reason they're sort of latching onto, but you would think if they were such good friends, he'd be able to overlook that. Now that Cole is finally getting this match, this could be what he needs, right? He's so worried about Adam Cole being obsessed with MJF. Well, guess what? Now he's got his match with MJF. So if he beats him, he can get it out of his system and they can go back to being best friends again. You would think he would be supportive of this. Okay, fine. You're obviously not going to let this go. So now you got your match. Now you got to go in there and you got to beat this guy's ass, right? But he's throwing, he's got the poo-poo face on, like he's a child. Is Kyle O'Reilly going to cost Adam Cole in some form or fashion, intentionally or otherwise? Is he going to cost him the match at World's End? God, I hope not. God, I hope not. Or are we going to see the return of Wardlow? Remember that guy? Right? Here you go. I'm throwing some member berries at you. You got to catch them. You're dropping them. Come on. Here you go. Here's one. Here's another one. There's another one. I got tons of member berries here for you. I got one with Wardlow's name on it. Remember that guy? Remember he was part of the Undisputed Kingdom? He had one job. He failed at that job. He got emasculated by Adam Cole. You couldn't even do your one job right. Go to the back of the line. Your only job now is to make sure that all the other members of this group don't lose their championships. Which they did, by the way. Because Roddy lost his international title to Will Ospreay. But would they bring back Wardlow to cost Adam Cole as revenge? And in effect, I don't know if he would be realigned again with MJF or if he would cost Cole the match independent of MJF. I don't know. But are we looking at one of those two finishes for World's End? Because I'm not really enamored with either one of those. I hope not. We should take bets on which one we think it's going to be. Either way, I think we know that MJF is probably not losing that diamond ring. He has had that diamond ring for 5 years now, okay? He has had that diamond ring longer. Think about this. He has had that diamond ring longer than most of Ric Flair's wives have had theirs. He has had that diamond ring longer than Roman Reigns had his championship for. Do you really think he's going to drop it all of a sudden to Adam Cole? That there won't be some kind of shenanigans involved in this match? What should happen, I'll tell you right now what should happen. MJF beats Adam Cole, or Adam Cole beats MJF, but preferably MJF, I think, should beat Adam Cole. But either way. And then they move on. They move on to other opponents. They move on to other stories in 2025. That's what I'm hoping we get out of World's End, is the end. We had another Chris Jericho New York Minute vignette. We had one of these last week. And he rattles off a bunch of New York references. Says that Matt Cardona must be upset that they left him laying on Rampage last week, like a used Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle action figure. Because, you know, Cardona's big into the action figures. Jericho accepts Cardona's challenge to a match with Brian Keith. And said that he'll be on commentary for that match. I'll be sure not to watch. Jericho also plugged their contract signing for Final Battle, which is going to take place on Ring of Honor television tomorrow night. And he calls Cardona delusional for thinking that he's going to walk out of the Hammerstein Ballroom with the ROH World title. Keith said that Cardona made a mistake putting his hands on Jericho, and he's going to make sure he pays the price. Short and sweet. Like all Jericho segments should be. This was fine. If we could condense the learning tree into a New York minute every single week, I'd be okay with that. Tony Schiavone did a sit-down interview with Darby Allin earlier today. Darby said the Death Riders are slowly chipping away at everything that makes AEW what it is. He said that he understands that a lot of young guys don't want to get involved because it's the first time they've made a living in pro wrestling. Darby said that if they don't get involved, then it's just going to keep happening. All of a sudden, he's sitting there and he starts punching himself in the face, which is totally normal behavior. And he's bleeding now from the mouth. And he says, the thing that bothers him, it's not blood and violence. That doesn't bother him. The thing that bothers him is no one doing anything about it. And he said that he needs to win the Continental Classic because it represents the passion of AEW. Moxley thinks AEW needs saving when it's the company that gave his career a second shot and allowed Sting to finish his career on his own terms. Nothing fools Moxley better than the lies he tells himself. This was good. Darby's gotten pretty good at these types of promos. And so I enjoyed this. I thought this was fine. You know, again, it keeps you aware of the fact that Darby is still very much in the mix to challenge Moxley for that championship. It feels to me like Darby's going to be the one to win the title from Moxley. But we have to see what the timeline is going to be here, because he is hell-bent on doing that Mount Everest climb next year. He just talked about it in the last couple days. He said Sting tried to talk him out of it. You know why? Because Sting has common sense. Darby does not. Despite all the crazy dives that Sting tried when he was in AEW, on the whole, I like to think the man has common sense. So if Sting is going to Darby and saying, look, don't do this. You don't have to do this. It's too risky. It's a stupid idea. Darby should listen to the man. Darby should listen to the man. Darby could be the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. But would they put the title on him if he's got to disappear and start training in the next few months for this mountain climb? Which I want to say, I think would take place in April. It's either April or June. I think April. So just keep that in mind, because that could really have an impact on the timeline of things here. So I don't know if they're going to want to put the belt on Darby or not, but this just feels tailor-made, like they're slowly building towards Darby, getting that crowning moment. Maybe at Revolution, 1 year after Sting had his retirement match. Darby Allin goes in there and wins the AEW World Heavyweight Championship for the first time. I suppose he could win it and then drop it, because is he really going to have a long run with it? He'll probably crash and burn in his first title defense. I don't think he's going to have that title if he wins it for very long. So they can kind of give it to him as a token. You know, God forbid, this may be the last chance we have to put the championship on Darby. But he's determined, man. He is determined to not only climb Mount Everest, but he wants to literally plant a flag with an AW logo on it. He wants to plant the company's flag on Mount Everest. But it's a very dangerous risk. It's a very dangerous gamble here. There are a lot of people who are far more experienced than he is doing that sort of thing who die on that mountain. Like, it's brutal. People die every year. To him, I feel like it's just, this is a cool thing. I like to challenge myself. And I said, what the fuck? I'll climb Mount Everest. It's like, okay, hope you know what you're doing. Tony Khan, I'm sure, is just elated at the prospect, though, of having his company's flag at the top of Mount Everest. So I'm sure he's all for it. In our second Gold League match of the night in the Continental Classic, we had Ricochet one-on-one with Brody King. Welcome to everybody here. You are joining late. The snow is falling. Winter is coming. Well, I guess winter came. I guess winter already came, right? I guess we already came. So now you're just here for the review. That's how it is. Brody King and Ricochet. This was the classic big man, smaller man match. Ricochet attacked. He just kind of bounced off of Brody. King no-sold some chops, and he leveled Ricochet with some of his own. Outside, Ricochet tried a Hurricanrana off the apron. He got caught, though, and he got powerbombed on the apron. It looked like he broke this guy's back. King set up for and ran through him with a crossbody against the barricade. That took us into the commercial break. Back from the break, Ricochet tried a handspring elbow, but King caught him in midair and hit a wild, released German suplex for two. Brody again flattened him with a chop and told him, fight back! And he did. Fought back with a low bridge and a springboard kick to the face, and that sent Brody King outside. And we had the Fosbury flop by Ricochet that connected, and then he tossed Brody back inside, hit a springboard 450, but King kicked out at one. King slowly rose to his feet. He turned Ricochet inside out with a lariat. Ricochet, though, wiggled out of a gonzo bomb attempt and then hit multiple pump knees, and then Brody came back with a corner splash and a cannonball for a two count. They fought on the ropes. Ricochet avoided a superplex into a sunset flip powerbomb, which caused King to pull off the top turnbuckle pad in the process. Ricochet hit a shooting star press, but he couldn't put him away with it. Instead, King rose up. He applied a rear naked choke. Ricochet fought to the apron. Brody went up on the ropes in the corner again, but this time Ricochet hit a DDT onto the exposed turnbuckle twice. And then, very interesting. Something very interesting happened here. Booze for Ricochet. I'm telling you, man, this is crazy. We have the New Day being booed out of the building on Monday night. And now we have Ricochet here being booed. Although Ricochet would kill to get the kind of heat the New Day got. But audible booze for Ricochet. Now, was it a case where the people didn't like Ricochet, or is it more a case, as I think, that they just really wanted to see Brody King win? Because Brody King, through these great matches that he's been having, even going back to the match he had at Wrestle Dream with Darby, let alone in this tournament, has been slowly getting himself over. Because the guy's a beast, and he goes in there and he beats people up, and what's not to like about that, right? He looks like a scary dude. He can work his ass off. It's fun to watch. So they booed Ricochet because they could tell, like, oh, shit, this guy's about to win. And they weren't very happy about that. So he caught a dazed Brody King with a spirit gun, not once, but twice, which is his new finish. And he pinned him to pick up 3 points in the tournament. Very good match. Again, the people wanted to see Brody win this match, I believe, which is why Ricochet was being booed. And remember, earlier in the show, Ricochet in that promo in the back, he did flash MVP's business card. Now, nothing came from it after this. We didn't see MVP. He didn't come out. You know, Lashley, like, nothing happened. But maybe he will join the Hurt Syndicate, you know, because I was thinking they're trying to recruit this guy. And so they're probably setting up him saying no, and then we'll get Lashley against Ricochet after Lashley is done with Swerve. But now I'm not so sure about that, and I'm not sure that it wouldn't be a good idea to have Ricochet be, you know, the newest member of the Hurt Syndicate, and to see Ricochet play more of a heel role. I don't see how it could be any worse for him than just being babyface Ricochet, which is not to say that he's, you know, not like he's being buried. Right? He's tied right now atop the leaderboard in the Continental Classic. He's won more matches than he's lost. Does he feel special? Absolutely not. And I think most of us who were talking about him when he was supposedly leaving WWE knew this is what would end up happening. But he seems to be happy. He's happy where he is. He's happy having the freedom he has. He's happy being able to work with these people that he's not worked with before. But Ricochet was not going to come to AEW and then 6 months later, you know, still be this huge attraction or a world championship contender, because AEW is filled with Ricochets, as talented as he is. And he was an innovator in many ways. There are probably luchadors and a lot of cruiserweight wrestlers in this company right now who modeled themselves after Ricochet and looked to him as some kind of an inspiration. Like, there are certain figures in wrestling who were very influential. The Amazing Red, for example, is one of those people. Ricochet is another. And so he's got the respect, I'm sure, of a lot of people on that roster. They want to work with him. He wants to work with them. But they all work a very similar style. In WWE, you have some wrestlers like that, but not a lot. So he stood out more. Ricochet had a more unique style in WWE because you didn't have a roster full of Ricochets. In AEW, you do. And that's a problem. If he wants to try to stand out from the rest of the pack, he's going to have to do more than just go out there and have these banger matches and do these big flips and dives. It's going to have to be something more than that. A character change, a personality change, a heel turn, something like that could be just what he needs to make him more interesting than he is right now. So him joining the Hurt Syndicate, I don't know if that's the plan here or not, but I think it would be a good move. You know, I'd be down to see that, if that's where this is going. Now, as the standings currently are, the Gold League standings, we have a three-way tie with 6 points. Claudio, Ospreay, Ricochet. They're all tied above the Gold League. 3 points, we have Darby Allin and Brody King. 0 points. Guess who's got 0 points? Commander. As I told you, there was one reason why Commander was placed in this tournament when Juice Robinson got hurt. And you're seeing why. He's in there to take L's. Nothing more, nothing less. That's why they didn't sub Takeshita or Malachi Black in there or somebody like that. Commander has one job. That's it. That's why he's in this tournament. In the Blue League standings, we have Kyle Fletcher alone at the top with 9 points. One of the things they've done a very good job of, and they've gotten right recently, is this Kyle Fletcher push. They are all in on Kyle Fletcher, and I like what they've done with him. They are actively taking steps to try to create a new star. And so far, I think they've done a very good job of that. Hopefully it continues. Right now, he's at the top of the heap in the Blue League. 4 points, we have Kazuchika Okada and Daniel Garcia. 3 points, we have Shelton Benjamin and Mark Briscoe. And 0 points, the Beast Mortos. Morty, dead last with 0 points. Guess what we're getting on Collision this week? First time ever, we are getting Kazuchika Okada one-on-one against the Beast Mortos. What's that match going to look like? Mortos and Okada. That's an interesting match. Now, we were told by Excalibur that we're headed to the back with Leo Rush and Action Andretti. So imagine my surprise when they cut to the back and we are with the AEW World Tag Team Champions Private Party. But then they show up. Then there's Leo Rush and there's Action Andretti. So that was a very weird segue. And they're eyeing the tag team titles. And you know, it hit me. At that moment, like you see the tag team titles, they're sitting on like a, I think they were sitting on a table. And Private Party is there. And it hit me. I said, you know, Private Party just had the biggest match, the biggest moment of their lives. And they beat the Young Bucks to win the AEW tag team titles for the very first time. Had a great match. And what have they done on Dynamite since then? I'm not talking Rampage. I'm not talking Collision. What have they done on Dynamite? Nothing. How have they followed up that big tag team title win? With nothing. They had a four-way title defense at Full Gear, and I believe they've had one match on Collision, and that's it. They've done nothing to follow up with the new tag team champions to try to, keep them hot, but you know, were they really that hot before? I mean, they were finally they were putting some effort in and trying with them, but they're certainly not making any attempt to, you know, keep them at the forefront, keep them on people's minds here on the A Show. They've been MIA. I saw them here. I said, oh, Private Party on Dynamite. I almost forgot about these fucking guys. It shouldn't be that way. But there they were. Top Flight now walks in with Layla Gray. They want to know how many tag team matches have Leo and Action won to ask for a title shot. Who dropped who from the Battle Royal, right? And they start arguing back and forth. And it's like, oh, God. So Private Party suggests that Top Flight face Leo and Action on Rampage this Friday to see who will get a tag team championship match against them. Well, this certainly screams Rampage. I will agree with that. And we'll leave it at that. Renee was backstage, because who the fuck else would be, with Mercedes Moné and Anna Jay. Ahead of their TBS title match on the show next week. And they both agreed before this segment, no physicality. Renee said that Mercedes has defended her title 10 times. And today marks her 200th day as the TBS champion. Mercedes praised what Anna has accomplished. She went to Japan recently to train on excursion. Saying it's cute. It's cute. What she has done. At just 26 years old. Yes, but it's not as impressive as what Juan Soto has done at just 26 years old. And now he is a member of the New York Mets. I just wanted to mention that. Mercedes rattled off what she's done before she even reached the age of 26, and then she went to go leave, and Anna stopped her and said, "You're going to listen to what I have to say." And she put over Mercedes for being one of the all-time greats, but she's made a living off being the underdog, and all she needs is 3 seconds to shock the world. Not much to it, but this was fine. It established that Anna is the underdog going into the match next week. I don't know if anybody honestly thinks she's going to win. She probably should, for her sake. Because remember, when she lost that last match to Mariah May, it was under the proviso that she will not get another shot at the AEW Women's World Championship so long as Anna Jay is the champion. Or so long as Mariah May is the champion, Anna Jay will not get a title shot. So that leaves the TBS title. Now, if she goes in there and loses to Mercedes, she's done. Her goose is cooked. That's it. Now, maybe she'll get lucky and Mariah will lose the belt in a couple of months. But hopefully not. I don't think she should. But yeah, if she loses to Mercedes next week, as I figured she is, I don't know what Anna's going to do next. She'll have nothing to fight for, because for her, it'll be right to the back of the line. So I kind of feel like, you know what? Maybe there should be a title change next week. But we still don't know what's going on with Camille and who attacked Camille. She got laid out a few weeks ago on Rampage. Nobody seems to give a shit. Nobody mentioned it. Poor Camille. And whatever. The hell with that. They closed the show with the ladies. It was Mariah May. It was Mariah May defending the AEW Women's World Championship against her former best friend, Mina Shirakawa. They showed Thunder Rosa in the crowd, and she was holding up a sign that said, "Mariah May, you may not." And she was screaming that, "You're not my champion." Mina got Mariah wrapped around the ring post with a figure four leg lock, Bret Hart style, early in the match. That took us into the final commercial break. Later on, Mariah hit the standing Hurricane Rana out of the corner spot that Trish Stratus used to do, where her opponent would be on the ropes. Trish is on the mat, but she kind of runs into the corner and does like a handstand and then uses her legs to take the person off the ropes. Well, that's what she did here. Took Mina off the top with it. Mariah then connected on two straight knee strikes coming off the ropes and then dropped Mina with Mayday, which is her finish, but Mina kicked out. And Mariah couldn't believe it, and the crowd cheered. Mariah got her up on her shoulders again, but Mina crucifixed her backwards, but she actually lost her. I don't know how that happened. But Mariah went over before Mina even hit the mat, but she tried to pin her anyway. And she kicked out. Mina caught her with a sling blade off the middle rope. And then Mina signaled for the glamorous driver. Got her up in the position for it. It's like a reverse DDT position. And then lifted her up. And she dropped her for the driver. And Mariah kicked out at two. So back to their feet. Mariah caught Mina with a headbutt. And then a very sudden Storm Zero. Put her away for the 1-2-3. And just like that, out of nowhere, Mariah May retains her AEW Women's World Championship. They had a good match. It did feel like the finish came out of nowhere, though, but I guess that's kind of the point. You know, she hits that Storm Zero out of nowhere. We've seen her do that a whole bunch of times since she beat Toni Storm back in August. And it was very appropriate that she did it again here, because when the match was over, Mariah gets to her feet. She gets her hand raised. And then we hear Toni Storm's old punk rocker theme song. And on commentary, Excalibur wonders, wait a minute. Says, could it be her? Because we've seen Mariah May dress up as the OG Toni Storm before. But of course, Mariah May is in the ring right now. So this Excalibur guy, he isn't very bright now, is he? But there she was. She comes out on stage, and it is indeed the real Toni Storm in the flesh, the OG Toni Storm. Not timeless Toni Storm. Not black and white Toni Storm. She was in living color. She was dressed like the old Toni Storm. She had the hat on. She had the black, the makeup or whatever under the eyes, like she was ready to, you know, play for the Giants. And by the way, the Giants could use Toni Storm on their team right now because the Giants fucking suck. There she was. She was on stage and she was soaking up the reaction, and Mariah had a look on her face like she couldn't believe it. They show Thunder Rosa in the crowd. And Thunder Rosa held up a sign that just said WTF on it. And now you know why they closed the show with this match. If you were wondering why are they headlining with this, now you know. But there's your Women's World Championship match. Now, is that your Women's World Championship match for World's End? I don't think so. I don't think so, because they were showing Thunder Rosa in the crowd. And it makes me think that Thunder Rosa is going to be set up to challenge Mariah next. And they're going to want to hold off on doing Mariah and Toni Part 2 until they get to Australia in February for Grand Slam, which is going to, I believe, going to be streaming live on Max, I believe. Now, they had a downgrade. They're not going to be in a big stadium. They're going to be in a 13,000-seat building, but they're still going to be doing this big show from Australia, and I would think you would want Toni Storm on that show in a championship match. So you do Mariah and Thunder at the end of this month, and you set up for Toni and Mariah on February 15th. That's my guess about how the timeline on this is probably going to play out. But no more Timeless Toni Storm. And I will miss Timeless Toni Storm. I think that the work she did with that character was phenomenal. How invested in it she was, how legitimately funny and entertaining whether it was on TV, whether it was at the scrums, on social media. She was fucking great, but you can only do so much and you have to evolve. And in this case, she, I guess she's kind of devolving because she's going back to the old Toni Storm, but it was time. And she could bring it back anytime she wants to. That's the beauty of it. You know, she's transported herself back into the modern day. But at any point, she falls back into a funk. She loses her mind. She gets bonked in the head. And we get timeless Toni Storm back. But it was time. It felt like it was time. Now, Collision this week is going to have Okada, as I mentioned, one-on-one for the first time against the Beast Mortos. We've got Kyle Fletcher against Mark Briscoe. Willow Nightingale and Jamie Hayter are going to be having a match in the International Women's Cup qualifier. That is the finals. The winner will be going on to the Tokyo Dome for Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th. And I was originally thinking Jamie would go to the Tokyo Dome, but given all the teases with Julia Hart, probably going to be Julia costing her a win. And Willow Nightingale will end up going into that four-way match. It'll be a representative from AEW, a representative, which I believe is Athena, from Ring of Honor, a representative from CMLL, and a representative from Stardom. And the winner of that four-way match at Wrestle Dynasty, I believe, can challenge for whichever championship she wants to challenge for. It's probably going to be Willow Nightingale in that match. And then Dynamite next week is the Holiday Bash. Will Ospreay against Darby Allin for the first time ever in the Continental Classic. And Mercedes Moné defends the TBS title against Anna Jay. And that is your lineup for next week. What did you think of Dynamite? Winter is coming with over 1,100 votes in so far and counting. 35% thumbs up, 26% thumbs in the middle, and 38% thumbs down. Got a lot of comments from people agreeing that it's just, you know, the matches are okay. The matches are fine, but they're just not invested in a lot of the stories and the characters and just what they're doing at the moment. Just not very exciting. It's not very interesting for a lot of people. And you see numbers like this, I mean, it's not even just numbers on Twitter or people, you know, review bombing or whatever people love to bitch about. I mean, I get messages about it every day, you know, from people who are longtime viewers of Dynamite, who have been here from the very first streams and are fans of AEW, and they say the same thing, you know, in a lot of cases. Yeah, they like this or that, but, you know, it's just not hitting the way that it used to. And all you got to do is just look at those earlier Winter is Coming shows and just compare them and how those shows were doing to how the shows do now. And it just speaks volumes, you know, it just says it all. I just got done talking about the Thanksgiving Eve episode of Dynamite. And if you look back at all the other Thanksgiving Eve episodes, because Thanksgiving Eve is always on a Wednesday, so you always have a Thanksgiving Eve episode of Dynamite, and those shows were doing 800,000-900,000 viewers, just like the early Winter is Coming episodes were. And then you look at this year, 537,000. Where did these people go? Well, they're on the road, and they're, you know, it's Thanksgiving Eve, and they're traveling. They weren't traveling last year? They stayed home for the last 3 years. Where did these people go? They're just not interested. Why? Why are they not interested? You got to get to the root of the problem. Can't just blame it on Twitter polls and trolls. Like, it's avoiding answering the question. They don't want to answer the question because they don't want to acknowledge that there's a problem. Clearly, the numbers don't lie, and there is a problem, and these people went somewhere, and they haven't come back, and that's the problem. All right, let's take a look at your super chats. Casey makes a good point. Says you can't announce a Moxley takeover like it's a scheduled event. Be like WCW announcing, tune in next Monday night, the NWO. They're taking over Nitro. They're going to take over the entire first hour of Nitro. We did have NWO Nitro once, and it was a fucking failure. That's why they never did it again. But all those times the NWO would come out and wreak havoc and, you know, chase the announcers away and all the stuff they would do. Like, imagine if they just announced every week that next week, that's what's going to happen. Tune in. I still don't understand what that whole Moxley takes over the Superstation thing was all. That was so fucking lame. I'm still waiting for him to take over the Superstation. He never did take over the Superstation. Still waiting for it. All right, let's start with... Thank you, Retro, for the super chat. What's the difference between the Grinch and Hulk Hogan? One lives on a tall fictional mountain. The other lives on a tall mountain of fiction. It's very true. That is very true. Base Beerus, no snow in New York City, just rain. Good. Good. It's the way that I like it. We had a ton of rain today, and I don't think that thought didn't occur to me, that this could easily have been snow. I'm very happy that it wasn't. The learning sicko, Dr. Bropio. I'll just get this out of the way before I disappear again, but that Mariah thumbnail looks like she's having a good time. Don't even know if that's PG. Mariah always has a good time. She seems like a fun person to hang out with. Base Beerus, you really want snow, huh? You could always leave New York. They got plenty of snow. You want to go up north, you can go skiing. I hear Vermont has a lot of snow this time of year. Boston, you can go there. Dark Effect with the $35 super chat. If you had the pencil in AEW, what would be your first order of business to try to heat it up? Who would you push as your top stars? Thank you for the reviews. Thank you, Dark Effect. It's a hard question because I think you need to really sit down and just map out a whole plan for this company. And I'm not sure there's anything at the moment under this current regime that they could do to really heat things up. Who would I build around? You want to build around a person like a Moxley. Not Moxley, Jesus Christ. Osprey. I definitely don't want to build around Moxley. They've built around him for 5 years now. It's time to move on. Osprey is one. I'll give you another example. This is a perfect example of what I talk about so often. Where is Powerhouse Hobbs? Powerhouse Hobbs came back, right? Several weeks ago. Why are we not seeing him on the show every week? Why are we not hearing from him on the show every week? Where did he go? Where has he been the last few weeks? He's not in the Continental Classic. They left him out. But that doesn't mean you just completely leave him off the shows. So you brought this guy back. He was in a couple of matches, maybe. You can't heat somebody up by bringing them back and then putting them right back on the back burner. It doesn't work that way. And I'm talking Dynamite, okay? I'm not talking Collision. I'm not talking Rampage. He needs to be on Dynamite. Where's he? He's one of those younger guys that you can build around. Let him go on a tear the way that they did years ago with Wardlow. Right, give him a shot. And I know that he had a brief run as the TNT champion, and it was very unremarkable, but that was the way it was booked. I don't blame Hobbs for that. Where's he at? You could build around somebody like him. So there's any number of people that you could try to build around as your kind of core nucleus of people. Osprey, Hobbs, those are two names that immediately jump to mind. Ricky Starks, if he wasn't being held hostage, is another one. You know, again, it's a matter of, like, what do you do with them? You got to map out all these different stories, who they're going to work with. Under the current regime, I don't see what that story would be that's going to suddenly inspire people to get excited about these shows, or lapsed AEW fans to suddenly go, oh, wow, they're doing what? I got to start watching this show again. they burned through a lot of goodwill with a lot of people who used to give them the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, I look back when Triple H was running the Black and Gold NXT. I trusted in him that, you know what? He knows what he's doing. He's putting on these great shows. I give him a lot of latitude because rarely did he let me down as a viewer. When I watched Lucha Underground, I had full faith in the writers of that show. Rarely did they let me down. So I said, yeah, I don't know where this is going, but I'm sure it's going to a good place because they've got a good track record and I trust these people. And I think Tony Khan had a lot of goodwill like that in the early days of AEW, and it's all been squandered now. And he doesn't have the Elite now to fall back on, and supposedly you hear all these rumors and stories about how, you know, different people are doing their own thing, and there's this lack of oversight, and what's true and what's not, I don't know. But I'll tell you what I do know. I don't need to be in the back to know this. I watch the shows, and they're just not as good as they used to be. And there are a lot of people who will show up and then they'll disappear. And it's not always because they got hurt, right? There are injuries that we don't know about because they don't tell us anything. But it's not like everybody who vanishes from the show is hurt, right? Sometimes they just vanish and there's no good reason for it. It's very frustrating as a viewer when you want to invest in some of these people and you feel like you really can't do that. It's tough. Yeah, Statlander is another one. Chris Statlander had that great match with Mercedes. We haven't seen her since. Base Beerus, the D Riders. That's what they are. They're the Death Riders. Right? Oh, AEW certainly has a lot of D Riders. I mean, that's for sure. But I hear from some of them every day in my mentions. Oz and Glorious, outside of a bunch of overrated Polynesians slow dripping a story for the next 9 years, what would rekindle your overall interest in AEW? Well, we just talked about this. I'll know it when I see it. That's the best answer I can give you. I'll know it when I see it. But, you know, do I have faith that story is right around the corner? I don't. We had the Elite. We have the Death Riders. It's not doing anything for me. It's not doing anything for AEW either. The Ruthless Aggression Podcast with a $9.99. Thank you, brother. Solomonster, would you rather drink a Pepsi Blue with Big Dick Johnson, a Vanilla Coke with Big Fat Oily Guy, or a Dr. Pepper Red Fusion with Big Daddy V, who has just popped a Viagra for fun? I think the most disgusting part of this super chat is Vanilla Coke. It sounds awful. I never tried it before. I have no interest in trying it. Pepsi, I have no interest. Dr. Pepper, I've never tried Dr. Pepper. Have no interest. I don't want to drink any of those things. I think I'll sit with my water bottle and me and Big Daddy V will share stories of our respective conquests. Raph. Yes, Raph. I'm fine. Raph, showing concern for me, I appreciate it. Oz and Glorious. Thank you very much. Base Beerus, Mercedes better be careful. CEOs are targets now. Yes, they are. Unfortunately. Unfortunately for them. Justin G, we super chat if we are abducted. We 911 your fever. Well, that's very kind of you. At least someone cares. It's good to know someone cares. Now, seriously, vanilla Coke is, it just sounds like two things that shouldn't go together. Says, we know you'd still stream at 108 because you love us. I probably would. If I wasn't completely delirious, I probably would stream at 108. Base Beer says, UFOs in Jersey. Is that a thing that's going on right now? Or have UFOs reunited the old WWE music group and they're performing in New Jersey? Michael Darcy, is there something outside of just tell better stories that AEW can do to bring interest back to the product? My idea would be less DQ finishes and interference and focus more on the wrestling. Focus more on the wrestling? This is what they do every week. They focus on the wrestling. I mean, yeah, they will do these DQ finishes, but you get DQs far less often in AEW than you do in WWE. Are you sure you're not talking about WWE? If anybody has an issue with interference in matches, it is WWE. Okay? And their product may be hot right now. But you have shows some weeks where every match except one has some sort of interference or distraction. It's obscene. That's a WWE problem as much as it is AEW, if not more so. AEW's problem is not that they don't focus enough on the wrestling. Come on, Michael. You can't be serious. But I mean, as far as, is there something outside of just tell stories? Yeah, slow the fuck down. Some of these shows, and again, the last couple weeks have been better. But just slow the fuck down with some of these television shows. Instead of just going from one to the next, to the next, to the next, next match, to the next, to the next, to the next. Slow down. If that means you got to cut some shit out, cut some shit out. Take your best stuff. Let it breathe. Devote more time to it. Instead of just constantly giving us wrestling, 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 wrestling. When you do that, nobody gives a shit. Nobody cares. Look at Raw the last 2 weeks. The wrestling on Raw the last 2 weeks has been below average. If you just, I had one person who showed me a screenshot. And it was the cage match rating for Monday Night Raw this week. And I think it was the same thing last week. And they showed me the cage match rating, and it was like a 4. Like a 4 out of 10. I don't know if they were trying to prove some kind of point to me, because like the Twitter poll had like 85% thumbs up for Raw, and they're trying to show me what cage match says. It's, you know, a 4.25 rating for the show. Yeah, no shit, because cage match is rating the matches on the shows. Cage match is not rating the promos and the angles on the shows. That's why Tony Khan loves Cage Match, and he cites it, and he uses it. He probably posts reviews on there under a freaking burner account, because it's all about the matches. How many 5-star matches? Was it a good match? Was it a great match? Was it a terrible match? Well, yeah, if you look at Raw the last couple weeks, the matches were nothing special, but that's not what carried the shows and made them entertaining and made them interesting and made them fun. So you can't use that as a baseline. It's all about you got to just give people entertaining segments on the show. And you do that through means beyond just banger wrestling matches with Ricochet and Commander and Will Ospreay and Claudio. And they're great. A lot of those guys I love, and I love their matches. But there's got to be more to it than that. The way they shoot segments on these shows in the back, which they don't really do, like, not that they don't do backstage segments, but this is actually, I'll give you an example. This is something I've talked about before, and a lot of the AEW sickos, they don't like hearing this because they automatically go, oh, you want the shows to be more like WWE, right? You want them to just copy WWE. No, I want them to copy a fucking formula that works. And one thing that I feel like we don't get enough of on these shows is when you have a story. Let's take the Death Rider story, for example, okay? Whenever we see the Death Riders on this show, typically, they're coming through the crowd when they make their entrance, right? They come to the ring. When we see them in the back, Like tonight, we had Jon Moxley cutting a promo. They were standing behind him, and he was looking into the camera, and he's cutting a promo, and he's addressing the crowd. He's addressing his opponents for World's End. Why can't we get segments on the show that are similar to the way the WWE does the segments on Raw and SmackDown, where you have the Death Riders, they're in their dressing room, right? They have their own dedicated locker room because Jon Moxley is the world champion, so why wouldn't he have his own dressing room? And the camera is in there, and the camera is sort of like this invisible fourth wall here, right, that you don't really acknowledge, but it's there. You have to suspend your disbelief, but there's the camera there. And the Death Riders are just sitting around, and they're interacting with each other, and they're having a conversation about something. Wheeler Yuta is like the redheaded stepchild of the group, so if you want to inject a little bit of humor into things, I'm not saying turn it into a comedy angle, but like look at what the Bloodline did with Sami Zayn. There was a little bit of levity in that story. And they really did a good job of fleshing out those characters and those personalities, especially when Sami was part of the group. And he elevated everybody's game. And then, of course, he just tried to crack everybody up every single week. Why can't they do something similar like that with the Death Riders, where they're sitting around in the back and we get a little more insight into what makes them tick and what they're talking about? And maybe they're, you know, we have Claudio kind of bullying Yuta around a little bit. And you know, but that kind of thing. I don't give a shit about Wheeler Yuta. I don't care what they have him doing on television. I don't care when he's on my television screen, if he tripped and he fell and he rolled down the ramp and he hit his head on the fucking beams. I don't give a shit. Give me a reason to care about Wheeler Yuta. We've seen Claudio tell him to shut up, and we've seen other members of the group bully this kid around. If you want to turn him into a sympathetic figure, one way to do that would be by character building segments like that backstage. Take 5 minutes. And this is something Tony doesn't like doing, because Tony Schiavone has talked about this. Tony Schiavone has pitched doing, you know, like a control center type segment. Tony Khan's like, nope, not doing it. You can do it on the YouTube channel, not on the show. You need match. Take 5 minutes and do segments like that. It doesn't just have to be with the Death Riders. It could be with anybody. Those are some of the most entertaining segments. They don't do it. The backstage segments they do are fucking awful. They're horrendous. They're terrible. That's the problem. They look like something out of a high school play most of the time. There's one answer. The Juliet with the $2 super chat. Happy 50th birthday to Rey Mysterio. Yes, Ray just turned 50. Ray just turned 50. He doesn't look a day over 24, but happy birthday to Ray. Justin G, hey now. Eddie Kingston has asked Renee about it. You know what? I guess that's true. I guess he has. But Eddie Kingston is kind of like the Kevin Owens of AEW, where, you know, he's got common sense, and he talks like somebody who has common sense and actually knows what he's talking about and asks the kind of questions that a normal person would want to know the answers to. And a lot of what he says is not wrong. He's actually right, a lot of what he says. Base Beer says Renee is in on it. Why? Why would she be in on it? What would be the purpose of that? You're going to go heel? If she's not going to work, then there's no point. Be calm, see clearly. I had a dream that Brian Pillman versus Jon Moxley, no DQ, happened, and we were praying both guys come out alive. Yes, there was a lot of blood. Oh, I can imagine. If Moxley was involved. Retro says winter came, but did Katie Lee? I don't know what Katie Lee Burchill is up to these days. Alex with the 25 says, a non-AEW question. With 4 Saturday night's main event shows each year, do you think the overall quality will be diluted, or will the booking decide that? The overall quality be diluted? Do you realize that back in the day, Saturday night's main event happen a hell of a lot more than four times a year. I don't think they were doing them every month, but it was damn near. Like, they had multiple Saturday night's main events every year. Now, of course, back then, they didn't have as many PLEs as they do now. And it will be very interesting to see how they navigate, for example, having one the week before the Royal Rumble, which I don't think is ideal. And they got one on January 25th, and the Rumble is a week later. But to answer your question, no. Four of them a year, they're quarterly specials. Am I worried about them diluting things or being diluted? No. I wish there were more of them, honestly. I wish we were getting more of them. Also, can't wait to see Cody walk out with the Winged Eagle belt. I think it's happening. I said it the other day, and I think... I don't think. I know now. I'm so excited. I can't wait for Saturday. Saturday is going to be great. Casey, thank you for being a member. Alex says, try some turmeric ginger tea to help with the inflammation. It's mainly just this cough that I have. It's just very annoying. I was friggin' choking last night. Manny, Moxley trying to do his hokey shit to the Hurt Syndicate, which results in them beating the shit out of him. The Death Riders could be interesting. Yeah, let's see Bobby Lashley just start shooting on Jon Moxley and the Death Riders. Joseph says, longtime fan, Judgment Day equals NWO 1999 black and white. Yeah, that sounds about right. Power Spy and Games, favorite and least favorite Christmas song. Favorite Christmas song is Feliz Navidad. Least favorite Christmas song is Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas. Dark Effect, I just wanted to say thank you for the kind words and the email. It meant more than you know. Well, you're very welcome. And you can reach out anytime. And I hope you're doing well. And I'm glad that you're with me here tonight. Hopefully you'll be with me Friday night and maybe Saturday night. And I'm here Monday night. But you already knew that, though. So you're always welcome. And you're very much a part of our community here. So just know that. George freaking Sekman, do you think Daniel Garcia would have been a better fit for them than Wheeler? Oh, in the Death Riders? Marginally. Yeah, I do. Not like a lot, but yes, I do. HBKC83, in your opinion, can a wrestler have a successful career as a tweener? Or is being a babyface or a heel a must? Oh, I don't know. I mean, there was a guy named Stone Cold Steve Austin who, you know, you could argue was more of a tweener than he was a real babyface, and he did pretty well for himself. So the answer is yes. Yes, you can. And No Cap, do you have a favorite Christmas movie? Yes, it's called Die Hard. Die Hard is one, and Jingle All the Way is another. That's always a fun one. And then Home Alone, of course. All fine choices. We are currently at 412 likes. So we just barely beat the goal. Thank you, guys. Appreciate that. Keep hitting that thumbs up. And right now, let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Here we go. Let's be the booker and send you guys out on a high note. That's what we're going to try to do. And we are kicking things off, folks, with a stipulation. We have landed on triple threat. We have to book a triple threat tag team match. So that is what we are going to do. We get to pick three teams. Oh my God. This cursed image. Bret Hart and Bill Goldberg. And yes, they were at one time WCW Tag Team Champions. I already know Bret is going to drop off the apron when Goldberg comes in for the tag, and he's going to say, fuck you, and he's going to drop down. So we know they're not winning the match, but they are in the match. As are Scotty Too Hotty and Grandmaster Sexay. Too cool. And then, Randy Orton forces Adam Pearce to add a stipulation to your match. Now, we have already landed on triple threat, but now we have to pick another stipulation. And we still have to pick the final tag team. So, let's do the stipulation first, okay? Is this the first time that we have been, we've been in a position where we've had to choose two stipulations for one match? I believe so. This is Be the Booker history here. Okay. So we have a triple threat tag team bull rope match. How the hell would that even work? A triple threat tag team bull rope match? Yeah, this is loaded, all right. We got to pick the third team, too. Greg the Hammer Valentine and Brutus the Barber Beefcake against Bill Goldberg and Bret Hart against Too Cool in a triple threat tag team bull rope match. This is going to be such a clusterfuck. This is going to be a disaster. I mean, I guess I don't know how this is going to work. I'm trying to picture this in my head, and I don't, because look, if it's a bull rope match, you could have three people at a time tied to the bull rope. But if there's tags, what are you going to do? Every time you tag out, you've got to take the thing off. You got to put it on. Then the other person's got to put it on their wrist. It just doesn't work. This is like a Vince Russo special right here. It just doesn't work. It's too messy. I think Bret would just beat Bill Goldberg to death with the cowbell, and that would be the end of it. And the other participants would just be so horrified that they would walk away, and Goldberg would just be left in a bloody heap in the middle of the ring. All right, women's Be the Women's Be the Booker, Maxine Dupree is injured. We were going to have Maxine Dupree, but she has hurt her ankle. And now we need to spin for a second chant. What is going on tonight here? What is going on tonight? Mike says Bret would never join such a mess. He would never agree to it. He would pull his creative control card. He said, I'm not doing this. This is not wrestling. All right, well, we spin again, and we have Natalia. We have Natalia, who is still going to be in a first-round match in the Women's Intercontinental title tournament. She could potentially advance in the tournament. Very indecisive Be the Booker tonight. It's going to be Natty taking on Stephanie McMahon. This has been a disaster of Be the Booker so far. I don't know what's going on tonight. I don't know what is going on here. All right, it comes down to our main event. This is it. We need to be saved. It's The Fiend, everybody. The Fiend Bray Wyatt is in the main event I don't know how I feel about this, but let's see here. The Fiend. Oh my God. The Fiend against Bill Goldberg, as if we needed to see it for a second time. I didn't want to see it the first time. We all know how it turned out the first time. Fuck this match. And fuck Bill Goldberg for what happened here tonight in Be the Booker. He screwed us twice. We got him in tag team Be the Booker and in the main event. Cursed. Cursed! That is what this Be the Booker was tonight. We got the reverse sweep. You never want to get the reverse sweep. Yeah, we got the clean sweep. Just not the one we wanted. That result made me irrationally pissed off. Thanks, Solo. You're very welcome. Well, look, they cannot all be winners. We'll just have to do better next time. That's it. Be the Booker chose chaos tonight. That'll be one that we remember for a while. Not for the right reasons, though. If there's ever a time for The Rock to take someone's spot. Yeah, why couldn't we land on that? We landed on 15 stipulations tonight. We could have landed on that one. He no-sold the first match, leaving Brett so he could show up in the main event. Oh man. You know, if there was one sound to kind of encapsulate that main event.
Yowie wowie.
Yeah, that would be it right there. Hey, Richie, thank you for the $5 super chat. Richie says, Batman movie ranking. The Dark Knight is number one. Dark Knight is not only the best Batman movie, it's the best movie I've ever seen. So for me, it's The Dark Knight. Number two is the first Batman with Keaton from 1989 with him and Jack Nicholson. And then the third one, well, see, I haven't seen Robert Pattinson, his Batman yet. I'm going to. I promise you I will. I just haven't seen it yet. So I can't judge that one. So it's a little unfair. Because maybe I would have that one third on my list. So I'm going to stop there. I will leave it at that. Dark Knight number one, and the first one from 89 is number two. Those are my two favorite Batmans. I didn't care much for the first Nolan one. I know it was like a trilogy. The first one, I really wasn't a huge fan of the first one. And then The Dark Knight came, and I loved it. And then the third one came, and I liked it, but I didn't love it the way that I liked or loved the second one. You know, the third one, I just couldn't get over Bane. I just, you know.
Batman, I'm going to beat you, Batman. The Batman.
Like, fuck off, man. Just fuck off. Like, I just couldn't. I couldn't stand it. I just couldn't stand it. So. But it's a cool shot, you know, when they have the football game and then the earth opens up in the middle of the game. I mean, that's a cool shot. I'll give him that. Heath Ledger, man. Heath Ledger. He was a dynamo in that movie. What a performance. All right, the next time I'm going to be live with you guys is right here on Friday night. We're going to talk about SmackDown. And then the big night is going to be Saturday because we have Saturday night's main event on NBC, 8 p.m. Eastern. I still don't know if the show is 2 hours, if it's 2.5 hours. I haven't gotten that clarified yet. I think it's 8 to 10, but it could be longer. I'm assuming it's 8 to 10. If it is, then, you know, I'll be live around 10:30 or so. And we'll talk about the show, but I'm very much looking forward to Saturday night, for sure. Richie says, my reaction when I heard Hogan turn heel informed the NWO. Shock. Shock. It's just like everybody else. I was very surprised, and it was a very exciting time in wrestling to see where it was going to go. Have I watched The Penguin? No, I've been asked about this, and I was told that I should watch The Batman first, so I'm avoiding The Penguin until I sit down to watch this friggin' Batman movie that's 3 hours long, and then I'll watch The Penguin. But if I'm going to watch The Penguin and not get references from the first one, if it ties into the first one, or I'd rather just watch the movie first and then watch the TV series. Thank you guys for the love. Be well. Stay safe. Winter has come. Until next year, it will come again. Hopefully you will too. I'll see you guys back here on Friday night for the SmackDown stream. Until then, take care, guys.